Grammy Award winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Jimmy Page.
Well, I love playing Led Zeppelin music, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking, I'm forward to playing.
All right, so you're, regardless, you're planning on touring and playing next year, right?
Well, yeah, because I've been working on all these lengthy projects, like the book and like the Led Zeppelin re-releases, with all this extra material that goes with that. And it took lots of time hours, you know, just listening to all of the tapes and making the selections. And it's been quite an academic process doing that and the book. And I'm just really wanting to get out there and play live. And so, well, it's next year. This is what I've got in mind. So, you know, I've got, you know, I've put it together.
I say, what ho, this is Brian. Call me Mello, the man who knows what he's been missing, Gardner, coming to you from Ramblon Towers Galley Studio in scenic Hespler, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramblon Radio, episode 78. Ramblon Radio is the only dedicated Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to ramblonradio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, reviews, any links I might mention during the show, etc. You can subscribe to Ramblon Radio through iTunes. If you go to iTunes, leave a review. If you happen to be an idea, buying anything, right? Pop over, leave a little review. You know, your favorite version of I'll Be Home for Christmas or whatever. Just pop over to the podcast and leave a quick review. It just helps them to notice us, gets better placement for us. You can subscribe to Ramble, iTunes, listen on Spreaker, Spreaker, and be sure to follow Ramble on Radio on Spreaker. And if I can get it up to 100 followers, then you kind of subscribe to iHeartRadio, which puts it in front of thousands of people. We can turn this into, a money machine. Make rich all of a sudden. Because everybody's making rich on the internet these days. And check it out at Ramble On Radio on YouTube. Follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. I do try to respond to people. Sometimes I wait until the show. Sometimes somebody says something on Facebook and I go, you know what? I'm going to respond to that on the show because I have to have something to say. My wife says, what do you say? Because asking me that question is easier than actually listening to the show, by the way. That's the short answer there. The long answer is, I don't know what I say. But I'm always looking for something, so... You know, yeah, if you say something on there, if I don't reply right on Facebook, there might be a chance that I'm just holding off. I thought, you know what, it'd be easier to say than to write what I feel like on this one. And so that happens. But otherwise, I do try to communicate with people on these forums. I do try to respond or let you know that I've seen it in some way. Like the shirt, if you're on YouTube, the shirt, it's got all the song names from the... It's like backwards. All the song names. Starts at Good Times, Bad Times. And goes all the way to actually a few things that don't even make... But it's by album side. Good Times, Bad Times. Whatever. If I pulled out the albums, I can tell you what the shirt says. Might be able to read it there. Babe, I'm gonna leave you. You shock me. See? Days then confuse. Your time is gonna come. Black Mountainside. Communication breakdown. I can't quit you, babe. Etc. So it goes from the first one to the last one, to stuff that popped up on the, I think the 92 sets and whatnot. I'm not even sure what two of these songs are. And so I have to dig into that, actually. I forget where they turned up. The last two, I know they turned up in the, but I'm not sure where they actually are. Where they come from. Anyway, courtesy of a guy called James Foodie. James a big get. I know James through Get the Lead Out. He's a big Get the Lead Out guy. Been to like 150 shows. And he put together this. He saw the pattern, liked it, thought, you know, I'll make a shirt. He put together, and he's basically made it for some of his friends, the Get the Lead Out guys and that sort of thing. And I mentioned, I said, oh, I need a shirt. And he graciously not only got it made up for me, sent it to me. And there used to be a commercial for... we're going back to the 70s for Mr. Transmission, I think, or Speedy Transmission, or one of those guys. And the guy, little Italian guy, goes to the thing. It was a loose bolt. He says, no, Chottage. That was James. No, Chottage. If you live in Ontario at that time, and I go, no charge, you know exactly what I'm talking about, by the way. It was one of those commercials. Anyway, that was James. No charge. He says, you have to send me a picture. So I've actually taken a picture of me recording this episode to put on the Facebook page to show James. I'm hoping it doesn't break the internet with too many doing that, picture of this, that. I don't know. Taking a picture of me taking a video of, you know. Ugh. But anyway, thanks to James for the shirt. It's a beauty. It fits. And I, you know, don't go hunting him down and asking for one, because I'm not so sure he's cool with that. I don't think he minds terribly. I mean, you know, but. And he's actually come up with a few other designs. He's showing on Facebook the last couple of days. So that's kind of cool. And speaking of James, I know James, you're going to see Get the Lead Out. James has been to see them like 100 and something times. I've seen them in New York City. I've seen them, you know, and I've seen them in Milwaukee. And he was at both of those shows. Dig that. And he's from the New York area. He heads out to Philadelphia on the first Sundays for the Bridgeport Rib House. The guys Get the Lead Out to a jam night. He heads out to that sometimes. He gets all over. But he won't go to Buffalo. I said to him, how about Buffalo? I won't do Buffalo. He's gorgeous. Poor Buffalo. But I did do Buffalo. I did. Even though people were telling me I was crazy. They got 4 feet of snow. You'll never get there. It's an hour and a half away. And we had no problems. Now, if you're going kind of south of the city, around the lake, on Lake Erie, you know, Buffalo to Cleveland, Buffalo in Pennsylvania, and Erie, Pennsylvania, that sort of thing. It's apparently that's where it gets really bad. And then south around in the west is where it gets really bad. In Buffalo downtown, and then we went shopping kind of fairly close to there, and then over to Niagara Falls, New York, for some shopping too. That was all fine. So if you're heading into Buffalo for a show or something, or for some, I know some people going and quite panicky about going this week for Black Friday shopping, but the shopping areas in downtown Buffalo is fine. It's kind of on the outskirts of Buffalo that it's bad. And the guys in the band coming from the east saw none of the big snow either. So it's not as bad as they're making out for the most part, I guess, is what to say. But yeah, so we had a good time in Buffalo. And I wonder if I have it here. I've seen these guys 6 times now. I went and seen God the Let Out, and I had a wonderful time. The guys treated me like gold. Nice conversation. I went in this time thinking, I kind of tend to mumble stuff to Paul about guitars or something, and kind of decided this time I'm going to not talk to him about work, or if I'm going to talk to him about guitars, I'm going to have something, you know, to say, unless he brings it up. You know, I'm not going to say, no, Paul, I've decided I'm not having that conversation with you today, if he wants to talk about it. And so happens I was working on my own guitar, doing a fairly big job on my Les Paul, refretting it, putting on what they call a compensated nut, and doing it myself. So that gave us something to actually talk about. On that front, I talked to him and Jimmy a little bit about that work, but we talked all sorts of, I ended up in the backstage with Paul Sinclair and him talking about they played CBGB's in New York City, the famous punk bar, and they've been playing together for, you know, 30, 40 years, from those early days, the two guys. So kind of got into a little bit of memory lane and stuff they were doing before Get the Lead Out, but together, which was cool. They liked talking about it, and it's great to hear that sort of thing. It's good to get people out of their normal, because Get the Lead Out show, everybody wants to talk Led Zeppelin with them, you know? So we minimized that conversation. Had a nice chat with the drummer, Adam, for the first time, too. Adam Ferrola, I believe his name is. And lovely, very quiet-spoken guy. How do you get to be the John Bonham guy and you're so quiet? But he is. He's a lovely man. And we had a good conversation, a good chat about drums and what the usage, the minimum usage his kettle drum gets, I think. Anyway, so what I wanted to say about them, though, is this is one of the things to love about them. You go to a show and you know, it's going to be Led Zeppelin tribute band. So you're going to hear rock and roll, you're going to hear Black Dog, you're going to hear A Whole Lot of Love, you're going to hear Stairway to Heaven, you're going to hear Kashmir. You're going to hear, is there any other must-hears in there? Here's the thing, they didn't play Rock and Roll at Black Dog. Here's their set list, and this is key. I'm telling you, I've seen them 6 times, right? So here's the first 5 songs. Good Times, Bad Times, How Many More Times, Houses of the Holy, The Ocean, and 10 Years Gone. I have seen them do The Ocean previous. That's it. I had never seen any of the other 4 songs. 6 times I've seen these guys. Good Times, Bad Times, How Many More Times, Houses of the Holy, and 10 Years Gone. I'd never seen those. Dynamite songs, all 4. And they nailed them. The Ocean, great. Then it goes, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, Ramble On, Dazed and Confused. The acoustic set, Going to California, Battle of Evermore, Hey, Hey, What Can I Do? And then intermission. After intermission, here's another one I never heard them play before. Achilles Last Stand. Can you just imagine going to a bar, going to a club, and some band's playing Achilles Last Stand? And then they're not some band, I get that. But geez, and they nailed it. They nailed it. Although Paul assured me he had a flub at the intro of the solo. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but I didn't pick it up. I was sitting going, oh, Jesus, he's getting that solo just so. Because it's one of the better Page solos, I think. Matter of fact, I consider, in terms of pure rocking it out, Good Times, Bad Times is one of the great Page solos. Achilles Last Stand is one of the astounding solos he does. And Fool in the Rain, and they did Fool in the Rain later as well. So it goes Achilles Last, second set, Achilles Last Stand, Thank You, Moby Dick, Fool in the Rain, Hot Song for Nowhere, and Cashmere. Encore, Misty Mountain Hop, Stairway to Heaven, Whole Lot of Love. So every time I've seen them, they've done Whole Lot of Love, Stairway to Heaven, Cashmere, and Dazed and Confused. I think they throw Ramble On in most times too. But to hear them do something like Achilles Last Stand was just, and like I say, Fool in the Rain, and Paul does all 3 of the solos, Good Times, Bad Times, Achilles Last Stand, Fool in the Rain, and nailed all 3 of them. And it was just an astounding, really good night. And I want to thank the guys for having me down, setting me up with tickets, entertaining me, as it were, after the show. I had a lovely day, and it was great to see them all. A good bunch of guys. You know, not just great musicians, not just a great band, not just great musicians, but actually a good bunch of guys. So if you get a chance to see Get the Lead Out, and how's this for a Facebook topic? Who is your favorite? Because I don't get to see them all. And there's guys out west, and there's guys down south, and there's guys up here in Canada, and there's one in Canada called Coda, who I've stumbled around my town a bit, and I've never managed to see. I follow them on Facebook, and I pick up after, this is us in Kitchener last weekend. And you go, well, if you'd have put in the Facebook page last weekend that you were playing in Kitchener this week, I might have gone. But anyway, that's, you know. There's lots of them, and there's some very good ones. And Get the Lead Out is the very best of them. And don't believe me, they played the Red Rocks Amphitheater this summer. Yes, the same Red Rocks Amphitheater that U2 played, for instance. And it's actually been recorded, and it's going to be on PBS sometime next year. And they're also going to release a CD of the show, is what I'm told. Lots of rights issues with that sort of CD, but nothing that should be insurmountable as long as you appropriately credit the music. So, God bless. They're a good bunch of guys, and they're great musicians. And I'd love to hear which ones you like. It's the bands to keep an eye open for, you know? Where am I at? Okay. So the intro for you guys on YouTube, or not on YouTube, actually, is, and I have not edited it down yet, so I don't know exactly what he says, but it's Jimmy Page on Ellen. He was on Ellen earlier this last week. He did it when he was in LA 2 weeks ago, and I think I mentioned it last week, but it hadn't aired yet. It aired, I think, last Friday. Speaking of being Friday, happy Thanksgiving. This is Thanksgiving Day down in the States to you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a good one, good feast, and, good football, and put on some Zeppelin to finish off the night. It should be a good night. But anyway, happy Thanksgiving down there, guys. So, Page was on Ellen. Showed last Friday, I think. And here's the thing. It was an okay interview. It was not a disaster as I thought it could have been. And Paige has gotten fairly good at the just kind of the sports type interview. You know, we gave 110% out there. You know, he hasn't said that yet, but that's coming in his repertoire, I think. But he doesn't say anything new. He doesn't say anything interesting or new anymore. He's pretty much said it all by now. And one of the problems is the age we live in. You know, in the 70s, you saw one interview or two interviews a year with Jimmy Page. And you really had no opportunity to see, if that, right? But you really had no opportunity. He did interviews, but you never saw them. So if one came across your desk, it was all new and it was exciting. It was interesting. And you had no real way of knowing what he said in other interviews. And you had no real way of knowing, getting access to those interviews, unless you wanted to go to the library and start hunting them down. And, you know, so as a kid growing up in the 70s, these things are so uncommon. Nowadays, of course, every interview is on the internet. Almost immediately after it broadcasts or airs or is printed, it's on the internet. You're on the news groups talking about it. And so when he says the same thing, interview, interview, interview in, interview out, it becomes very boring very fast. So he's really not saying anything new. And he probably didn't say anything new in the 70s, on this interview to that interview. But who knew, who cared, right? Nowadays, it's every interview is the same. It's same old boring stuff. So he's really kind of a boring interview that I find these days. An interesting guy, and he's a good speaker and well-spoken and stuff. But he doesn't say anything new. And he didn't on Ellen, and he hasn't in any of the interviews I've seen since. You know, even when I saw him in New York, I was excited to be there, and I loved it, and it was great sitting kind of listening to him in that setting and hearing him speak from, you know, for an hour, no distractions, which tends to be the problem. You put it on the internet and then I cook dinner or something and I miss half the interview anyway. And I'll get to one of those in a second. You know, so it's interesting enough and he's got to do what he's got to do, but it's also, he didn't say anything. He hasn't said anything in ages that I didn't hear 6 months ago. And that's not his fault. That's the nature of the beast. And I guess probably pros would tell you, yes, repeat, repeat as necessary, you know, hammer your message home. He's selling something. He's got a message to sell, hammer it home. So these interviews come up and interview after interview after interview. And I don't often, time's valuable enough that I kind of don't, Robert Plant, and this is what I was talking about, he did an interview in Chicago, I forget what it was, who it was for, a couple of guys, it was in a studio, and a couple of guys sat behind their microphones, he sat behind his microphone, and they talked for, it was an hour and 20 minutes, no, I don't think it was quite that long, but I got about 25 minutes through it for, like, ran out of time, and again, I was cooking dinner, I was making stuff happen as I was doing it, but I find with Plant, he's almost the opposite, he says all sorts of stuff, but really says nothing. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of me when I've been drinking and somebody wants to let me go. I'm going to talk, you know. You know, they ask him, and I think interviewers have picked it up, they'll ask him some random kind of question, some very open-ended questions. They ask Robert Plant very open-ended questions. You'll get five-minute answers in which he talks about Wales and Texas and women he's loved before, and the music of John Hurt, and the music of some guy you've never heard of in Africa, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and he'll just go on, he's rhapsodizing and philosophizing, and at the end of it, he hasn't said anything. There's no kind of meat on the bones for a guy like me who's got a show to do. Let's put it that way. If, you know, if you're looking at it from a journalistic perspective, there's no meat on the bones of what he says every once in a while. And I think it gets him in trouble. I think that's, you know, when he says stuff that we get angry about here, I think that's what's happening. He's just kind of going, and somebody's, you know, the only thing he said in the interview was interesting was, you know, something about Led Zeppelin being a boy band or something about, you know, something that annoys the fan base. And he really doesn't necessarily even mean it, doesn't even realize what he said, I suspect. But that's, you know, kind of the two different perspectives on their interviews, and neither of them, at the end of the day, are very interesting interviews anymore, I find, because neither of them are saying anything that's new or interesting to me. not that they're, and I don't mean that to say they're not interesting, or that I'm not interested in what they have to say, or that, you know, I just find that it's, I'll put on an interview for 10 minutes and then go, you know, nothing's happening here. Nothing's, and he may at the 40-minute mark make some interesting comment about something, but that's, you know. So that's there, but there's lots of interviews out there these days with Robert touring, and Jimmy just finished up his wrapping up his book signings and whatnot. And there's another book signing in London, so that means more interviews to come. All right. A couple of things. I missed this one. Unleaded was released November 8, 1994. So, 20 years ago. I'm going to go back here. Two and a half weeks. It's the 27th, so 19 days. That's easy math. I talked a fair bit going back to, I started keeping track of what I said on certain episodes. So you have to, just give me a minute here while I go backwards through, how sad, eh? But I did, yeah, on August, the last one I did, on episode 70 in August, I talked about it was 20 years since they recorded Unleaded. And I talked in a fair detail about that at the time. I'm not convinced I have anything more to say. I had intended to do a show specifically on it, but after that show was wrapped, I don't know that I have anything to say that wouldn't be repetitive. I don't think I've ever learned anything new about it in the last, you know. There is the Robert Plant book that we talked about a few weeks back. Dave Thompson's book mentions that Plant... kind of threw a challenge in front of Plan. He had some rhythms that he'd been sampling, and the plan was to make a backbeat of these rhythms, these African rhythms. And but I've just finished, I'm going to talk about it in a bit, Glenn John's book, and he went to the concert in the desert in the 60s with Brian Jones, and he went off to Brian Jones into North Africa and got a bunch of rhythms, and Brian Jones had talked about doing it, and it sounds like a very similar thing to what Plant was doing in the 90s, and so when he met up with Page, he gave him one. It was a challenge. Here's one. You want to do this? Okay, I want to see that you're serious. Here's these rhythms I've got. Here's one specific. Go do something with it. Bring it back. We'll talk after that. So Page did, and he kind of thought that it wasn't going to happen. It's phrased in the book as such that he wondered if Page wanted to make music or drive ride in the limo with David Coverdale. That was his. And Page came back with it done, and what he came back with impressed Robert. It turned out to be Yalla on the album. I don't know if we've talked about that a bit before. Yeah, I got nothing much more to say about Unleaded, though. It's a great album. I really like it. It nails, you know, it kind of changes up, but doesn't completely alter a number of performances of Led Zeppelin songs. And they do a few that are straight up, you know, Black Dog is still Black Dog. That sort of thing. You know, but what they change is they maintain the integrity of the song, I think, is the point. And I like that, while still changing things up. In November 21st, so going back a week, 1995, so we're going to 19 years ago, it's the death of Peter Grant. Suddenly, he had actually spent much of the 80s and into the early 90s in seclusion, kind of drug-fueled, cleaned up, lost a pile of weight, going into the 90s, was a proper British gentleman, you know, and he was actually chauffeuring people. He picked up occasionally some friend at a chauffeur business or something like that. I forget how it goes. and was doing that, was chauffeuring people on, you know, weddings and stuff on weekends. People didn't know that Led Zeppelin's manager was taking them to their wedding because he'd lost so much weight and whatnot. But it was just something for him to do to get him out of the house, and I don't think he needed the money. But he died very suddenly of a heart attack in 1995. My favorite Peter Grant story comes from his daughter. There's a book on Peter Grant, and I meant to get it, and I think I've made a mental note to myself. This time next year, I will read it. It's one I've looked at a number of times and almost pressed the buy button. I think I will next year, so I can talk about it maybe on his the 20th anniversary of his death. But my favorite Peter Grant story comes from his daughter. He used to show up at school in the old, he had an old sports car. Well, we know the old sports car from the song Amazing Same. He used to show up in that with goggles, an old 1920s style goggles and the riding helmet and the gloves, the driving gloves, to pick up his daughter from school. And she'd say, "Why can't you just be like the other dads?" And you could see it would be really embarrassing, wouldn't it? If you're a teenager, moving into your teenage years, and your dad's this out there kind of character like that. Anyway, and of course, there's lots of Peter Grant stories, and lots of them are not lovely stories, nice stories like that. But that's kind of my favorite. It talks a little bit about that he really was a character. Finally, in terms of before we get to the heart of it, get to the business, James Dillon, the singer from Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience, has a is doing a last year at Christmas we talked, he did a Robert Plant, he's an artist, and so he drew a picture of Robert Plant. It's the one with him holding a dove at Kazaar Stadium in San Francisco. And it's lifelike. It's scary good. And now he's done one of John Bonham. It was supposed to be wrapped up this. I think by now he wanted all four done. He wants to do all four guys. I think by now he wanted it done. But it's not happened as fast as he'd like, I know. But he did get it done. And it's available now, right now, jamesdillonofficial.com. $95 for a 9x13 print signed by James himself. $65 for a 6.5x10 print signed by James Dillon himself. And there was $2,000 you could get the original Robert Plant. I haven't heard that he's making that available. But if you're really interested in spending that kind of money on an original James Dillon picture, it might be worth getting a hold of him on Facebook and asking if it's available. But those prints are available. They will make a lovely Christmas present for a Led Zeppelin fan, particularly if they're John Bonham fans in your list. It looks like he still has Robert Plant pictures available too. Again, and we make a lovely Christmas. In a couple of weeks, I'll do the Christmas present episode, the gift giving episode of the Honey, If You Really Love Me, This Is What You'll Do episode. But for now, just be settled if there's an idea. I read this week Glenn Johns' book, Sound Man. Glenn Johns, at age of 17, got a job, by stroke of sheer luck, got a job at BMI Studios, I think it was, in London. They were the most prominent independent studio, so not BBC, not government run. They were used, they were basically hired out in 6-hour slots for session people. And he got a job being the Johnny Everything. Mop the floors and set up the mics and carry all the gear. When they did live shots, for instance, orchestras wouldn't come into the studio. The studio would go to the orchestras. And, so they would spend time and time and time. And he tells the story that they would set up, they have a production room somewhere, and they would set up all the mics, and they would run them to the board. Everything would be set up, and it would all be done without the actual engineer in the room. He would show up when it was time to show up. And he would show up, turn up the volume full, and they would have a couple of monitor speakers there, and he'd stick his head between the monitor speakers, and if he could hear any humming, somebody was in trouble. But that was his job, make sure it wasn't humming, make sure everything, all the cords were run and all the mics were working and whatnot. And he eventually grew to, fairly quickly really, actually engineering. And especially when the rock guys came in, a lot of these old guys didn't like the music, didn't want anything to do with it. So the rock guys start coming in and he gets the job. He accidentaled into his first job. Bottom line is the engineer who was supposed to record, it was a weekend job, the engineer was supposed to record, it didn't show, and they basically say, well, you do it, you got it, and it actually became a hit, it went well, it sort of went well. The story goes that the producer was not happy that he got some guy who'd never engineered before, and complained and bitched to the studios. The record company basically called and complained and bitched and didn't want to have to pay for the studio time, etc., etc. And when he was called into the office, he said, I did what I could, listen to the recording. And they listened to the recording, said, you know what, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfect. And they called the record company back, says, stuff your complaint. There's nothing wrong. Listen to the recording. Don't listen to the guy who was saying it all went wrong. And from there on in, he got jobs. That's what it was. So he became an engineer, and he started, you know, the Stones. He started getting in with the Stones. He was living for a while with Ian McLaughlin. No, Stuart, Stu, Stone's keyboard player, Ian Stewart, who Led Zeppelin boogied with, of course. And so the Stones, when the Stones first got out, used to like hang out at their house. The girls would, you know, you hear the story of the girls chasing them up the street, would be his house they would run into. So he was with the Stones from the very early days, right through to, Black and Blue, I think, 73 or 75. Did some of the early Who singles, etc., etc. Knew Jimmy Page as a young man. Him and Page grew up not that far from each other, and he met him at a variety show at a youth club where Page was playing. And he recognized then that, boy, this kid's pretty good. And they were both kids. You know, they would have been 12 or something at the time. John's actually was a singer and sang in the choir, and he cites that as being life-changing moment, joining this church choir, because he learned to sing, he got very into music, and everything follows from that one. So he engineered Led Zeppelin 1, their first album. His brother Andy, who he got into the business, worked on three or four of their other albums, I think on 3, 4, and Houses of the Holy, maybe Into Physical Graffiti. Andy Johns was there. But Glenn Johns did the first album, and he takes very little credit. He basically says, I just sat back and stayed out of the way, you know, pushed the buttons and stayed out of the way, because these guys knew what they wanted, and Page and Jones were studio veterans. But he does, well, I haven't even got to the topic yet. 30 minutes. I thought this was going to be a fast one. Amazing, isn't it? I'm going to have to wrap up very shortly, actually. So where was I? Oh, I just lost my train of thought. Train of thought just derailed before the station. How do you like that, eh? So he didn't have much, but he does talk about developing what he calls a stereo drum technique, and he developed it on those Led Zeppelin 1 sessions with John Bonham. It basically amounts to, you're planning to put 4 mics, and you run them into one channel. And what he accidentally discovered with the Zeppelin sessions was he could have one of the mics kind of points towards the snare. He could run that. He had to change the mic setup just a little bit, but he could run that into a separate channel, separate the channels, and then when you bring them back together in the mixing, you bring them not all the way back together. And what would happen is that one mic would pick up the ambience of the rest of the drum set. So you really got a stereo effect in the drums, with the entire drum set. So he talks a bit about that. But other than that, his bit on Led Zeppelin's maybe 5 pages long, on the first album. He talks, and every once in a while, he runs into Jimmy Page or something. But Not very often. He was involved with the Arms tour. He did the recordings and whatnot for the Arms tour, so he saw it. But he doesn't really mention Page in that. So it's not. It's interest from a Led Zeppelin perspective. There's some interest, but it's not something you would go out and say, "Well, he talks about Led Zeppelin, so I'm going to spend my $25 on this book." It's not a Led Zeppelin book. However, if you are a music fan, and specifically a 70s music fan, 60s, 70s, those bands, The Who, The Stones, Zeppelin, and it kind of, it's a list that's scary. It goes on at the band. This was a really good book. This was a really enjoyable book. You know, if you listen to this podcast often enough, you know my bitch. I hate books where people talk forever. And I always cite the going with Grandpa Gus across the river to get fish and chips stories from poor Keith Richards' book. But that's the fact. There's too many books waste too much time talking about crap that has nothing to do. I'm here because I want to know about the music, you know, but the musician and the music and to a degree the man. But I don't really want to know about your potty training or about, and you think I'm kidding, go read Stompin' Tom Connor's autobiography. Go get past the first two chapters if you can. He has a memory of from his earliest days, and he talks about potty training, talks about his potty training. If you're looking for a book that you'll never finish, there's one. I have no time for that stuff. He does not, there's not a single story in this book that is irrelevant to the point that he is a musician or he's an engineer. He's a music guy. So even going back into his youth, he starts it with joining the choir, which is relevant, right? And it's interesting from a musical perspective. And then he talks about on summers they would tootle off to the farm, his uncle's farm, and you're thinking, oh, here we go, all right, here's the Uncle Gus stories. But no. The relevant point was his uncle was a guitar player who loved the American folk music and used to sit at night singing to them. So it's three or four pages of the farm, and this point of the story was he got introduced at a very young age to this music that most kids in England at the time weren't hearing, and so on and so forth. I couldn't think of one example of a story that was not relevant musically. I really enjoy it. And he gets into the meat of the story fairly quickly. It's interesting to talk about being in the studio even before he's doing anything other than writing is interesting. There's perspective there of what it's like to do that kind of work. And then, of course, he gets down to the work. And they're just, yeah, the names. There's so many people that he's worked with. Ideas that he came up with. Stuff you've never heard of, country people, rock people, and he has real neat opinions on new music and what's going on in recording. And it's not music so much, it's recording techniques, and he has no time for it. He likes the band in the studio together, and he thinks actually music's been ruined by studio technology, not by the musicians, not by the record, but by studio technology and the use thereof has ruined modern music. He really kind of dropped out of the music business, and you get to about the mid 80s and his discography just about disappears. There's an album here and an album there, and it's voluntary. He just says how I do it is no longer relevant, and I don't want to be relevant in the kind of environment that is being done nowadays. Now he also indicates at the end that that's changing a bit, and then he's under the opinion that he's again kind of relevant, and he's been doing some work, but yeah, there's a long hiatus, and it's a good book, and it's a really interesting book. So that's Glenn Johns, Soundman, I believe it's called. Soundman by Glenn Johns. GLYN, by the way, if you're looking. Has relevant Led Zeppelin content, but not anywhere near enough to go out and buy a book on. If you're thinking, oh, I just buy Led Zeppelin books, don't bother. It's, you know, you're talking four Jimmy Page stories and five pages on the first album, and that's about it. So, you know, but if you just want a book, a music book, it's exceptional. And I would recommend it highly. And again, another Christmas list book. Speaking of the Christmas list, I was going to also review this tonight. Tight But Loose, number 38. And I think I showed it last week. He does an interview with Jimmy. It's a 50,000 worder. And he does a number of really, but I'm not going to get into it because I actually got to wrap up and get ready to go to work. So there's, there you go. Tight But Loose, number 38. Look, you're looking for a Christmas gift for somebody? Go to tblweb.com, go to Tight But Loose, Google Tight But Loose, it'll come up. It's I think it's tblweb.com. Yeah, nice putting it on there, yeah? Tightbutloose.co.uk. How's that? Tightbutloose.co.uk. If you're on YouTube, it's right at the bottom there. You can see it. Okay? It gets it numbered. By the way, it comes with this amazing picture. I love this picture. If you're on YouTube, you see it. If you're not, look, get closer to your pod device. Look hard. Maybe you see it. That's Jimmy Page handing his guitar off in Frankfurt, Germany on June 30, 1980. And it's an excellent, and I'm telling you, that one's getting framed and put up in my office. But only I had wall space in my office for another Jimmy Page picture. We'd really be laughing. Not the office, sorry, not my office. The dungeon studio. It's going up in the dungeon studio, which doubles as an office on off recording days. So I'm going to talk about that next week. We didn't get there. I don't have time to do it justice today. But go buy it. If you're looking for a gift for the Led Zeppelin fan, go get a subscription. Go buy this one plus a subscription for next year. They'll dig on that. They really will. It's exceptional. I'll write a review in the next couple of days, and you can also read that. But I will next week. I will get at it. I promise. And so that is it. That's it, folks. Ramble on Radio, episode 78. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Check rambleonradio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, link to TBL Mag, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, on Google Plus, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. Talk to me, folks. Tell me who your favorite Led Zeppelin tribute band is, by the way. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. And if you do, leave a review. You can listen on Spreaker. And be sure to follow Ramble on Radio on Spreaker. And check it out at Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio, episode 78. Keep it cooling, babies. Keep it cooling, baby.
There'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.